your paradise. If you think I'm spending eternity with you, then you better think twice. So much for the angels.
Hello and welcome to the Sydney Atheist Podcast. I'm Dave the Happy Singer, and today I'm joined by Jason Brown.
Hello there.
And Ian Wolfe.
Hello.
And today we're going to be discussing a reading list for atheists.
Sorry mate, I think I'll be off. There's a bloke in purgatory who's advertised the spare room in his lot. So much for the blessing, so much for the afterlife, a never-ending stretch of tedium and strife. And the tales of Nirvana are simply not true. So much for heaven, and so much for you. So much for heaven, and so much for you.
So, about this reading list for atheists then.
Go for it, Jason. Tell us about a reading list for atheists.
Well, it's one of the things that we're working on as part of the Sydney Atheists website kind of thing. And I figured we'd cover maybe some of the obvious bases and maybe some of the less obvious bases. As I look across the studio here at my bookshelf, I can see The God Delusion, obviously. I can see God Is Not Great by Christopher Hitchens. I can see Hitch 22 by Christopher Hitchens. The Greatest Show on Earth by Dawkins, again. And all that's lovely stuff. But I can also see Guy P. Harrison's 50 Reasons People Give for Believing in a God, which I think is actually the best book you could possibly give a waverer. Have either of you read that by any chance?
I haven't.
I have not.
I do have a different one that I'd recommend.
Okie dokie.
Also from the, not from the usual suspects, you know. Everybody's expecting us to say, oh, read The God Delusion. It's really good. But my favourite is Godless by Dan Barker.
Ah, all right.
Who was a former fundamentalist.
A fundamentalist.
He was a fundamentalist, formerly. A formerly fundamentalist.
As opposed to the Catholics, who are fundamentalists.
Super intelligent man and a fantastic musician, who, after preaching for many years, became an atheist. And he's now, I think, co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, along with his wife, Annie Glory Gale, in the USA, and wrote a splendid book about his journey. But it includes a lot of the stuff that The God Delusion does, arguments for the existence of God and why they're bad, arguments against the existence of God and why there's no good answer to them, and a lot of the kind of the atheism 101 stuff that gets covered in The God Delusion as well. But I think Dan Barker does it a lot better.
I think Barker's an excellent speaker as well. We saw him down at AtheistCon
in
Melbourne. And he was quite brilliant. And I seem to recall he just spanked George Pell in a debate not long before, which was quite amusing.
I was actually at that debate.
Were you at that debate?
I took part in a bit of Pell spanking myself.
Did you now?
That's what you call it these days.
It was a thoroughly good debate. I think it's still available online. George Pell was absolutely dreadful. Dan Barker was extremely calm and kindly. And just a wonderful man. And so, of course, George Pell spit the dummy. They'd agreed to have, like, photographs taken together afterwards, like commemorative photos for the occasion. And Pell just walked off and refused to have his photo taken with Dan Barker because Dan Barker had slapped his ass so hard. It was hilarious. He was in such a mood. And he's such a big, beefy fella. You know, he's an ex-rugby player, George Pell. And, you know, he just looks like a gorilla. And he looked like a big, grumpy gorilla just throwing shit around his cage. It was
big
fantastic.
Grumpy gorilla in a dress.
Yeah.
So, Ian, what would you suggest?
Well, I'd go in a different direction and suggest His Dark Materials by Philip Pullman.
Ah, ooh. The fictional angle. Okay.
Fictional angle. You've got an alternate universe story where something not unlike the Catholic Church is in control, something recognisably similar, the Magisterium.
Now, one of these was adapted for movies.
The first book was adapted for movies. They haven't made the second two films, possibly because in the second film they begin the war against heaven to declare the Heavenly Republic. Because I didn't vote for him, did you?
Well, no.
No.
But no one said this was a democracy. No.
Ah, but it is after the revolution.
Although I did appear in a short film.
Tell us all about your short film experiences, Dave.
I appeared in a short film called The Heaven Election, where I played the incumbent Jesus Christ, who, along with his father, the incumbent God, was defending heaven against a challenger in a democratic election, a younger, more attractive, cooler God and Jesus combo. And I was playing the
older, less attractive.
The Jesus we know and love from fiction, who I played very, very similarly to Tony Blair. at the time, much of my portrayal was based on the Tony Blair impression, which happened by accident. And as the takes went on, I did it more and more. I think it was about the third take that they used in the film.
And can we see this film anywhere online, Dave?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. If you search for Heaven Election, you should be able to find it. If not, I'll post it on my blog at davethehappysinger.com.
Show notes.
The plug. Good. We'll put it in the show notes too. So His Dark Materials, we were talking about before.
His Dark Materials. Sidetrack. Yes. Yeah, I think His Dark Materials is a nice bit of fantasy for children and adults that takes away the assumptions that just because you're in authority, you're doing good.
And there is that assumption that gets made.
That's
an excellent suggestion. What else would I suggest? I'm just trawling my bookshelf at the moment. In terms of science books, which aren't necessarily strictly atheist tracked, but I'd certainly recommend anything in the biology field by Dawkins, obviously. But again, usual suspects. I love reading Stephen Jay Gould's stuff. And we know we have some problems with Stephen Jay Gould with the Noma nonsense. I end up bashing my head against the wall and shouting, "Accommodationist!" Ah! but I love his books. I mean, I've got the one with the Noma essay in it open at the moment. And I'm just desperately trying to avoid rereading the Noma essay. But yeah, Stephen Jay Gould stuff. Anybody else?
What does NOMA stand for, Jason?
Non-overlapping magisteria. It's the idea that religion has questions it can answer and science has questions it can answer and never the twain shall meet. Unfortunately, religion makes claims on reality and reality is really the domain of science. Yeah. There's already encroachment right there. So there's a bit of a problem.
As long as religion refrains from making comment on the real world, past or present or future, I don't have any problem with it whatsoever, enjoying its own little magisteria in the corner.
Can you think of one single religion that doesn't make a claim on the real world?
Absolutely not. So kill them all.
There are some forms of Buddhism that don't make claims about the real world.
Maybe.
The purest Buddhists who don't have the Hindu add-ons, don't have any other add-ons, and don't worship Buddha as a god, they've got a philosophy and a technology for being happy, or at least not suffering, that doesn't really have anything to do with how the world works or how it was made, or whether there's any deities at all. I mean, they're agnostic. They're saying, don't pray to the gods because they're not going to answer. Don't pray to me after I'm dead. There's no... If you go for that type of Buddhism, as opposed to the other types of Buddhism, which are quite theistic, I think that's the closest you get.
Interestingly, though, is that a religion or is it a philosophy?
Well, everybody else claims they're a religion. Everyone I speak to, when I say Buddhism is not a religion because he doesn't have any cosmology or talk about the world, they, oh, yes, it is. There's all these Buddhists and they're being religious. And so they're being persecuted as if they were religious.
Are these the same people who say Christianity is not a religion? It's a relationship. Christianity is not a religion. I have just as much problem with religion as you do. Christianity is not a religion. It's a relationship with Jesus.
I've not heard that one.
Haven't you?
Yeah, have you not?
Oh, I've heard it quite a few times.
Does that mean they're cheating on their spouse if they're married?
Yes, and they're gay if they're male.
Right. Well, particularly, wasn't there a branch of fundamentalism that was trying to get people to think about Jesus while they were masturbating or having sex?
Oh, dear.
Regardless of gender.
I think Jamie Tilstein spoke about this, didn't he?
I vaguely recall him saying something.
It might be comedy.
Imagining Jesus.
No, he got it from a real source.
Stretch out on the cross like a naughty little messiah.
I think it was supposed to stop you masturbating in the long run.
Is it thinking about Margaret Thatcher to make it last longer?
Something like that.
That's the way it strikes me. Maybe I've let out too much about my internal workings there.
Margaret Thatcher is always a good one.
Who?
Margaret Thatcher.
Margaret Thatcher. Yes, yes.
For delaying the inevitable.
There are terrible pictures in my head now. This is awful.
Yes, but you're not about to have an orgasm, are you?
Definitely
not. So it works.
You could say this experiment has succeeded.
Works. Yes. Works in a very twisted sense.
Well, it's consistent with my hypothesis, but I don't think...
Okay, so back to the reading list. having made the inevitable digression into masturbation, how about for atheists to actually read religious tracts?
Ooh, that's...
Would we recommend this sort of thing? I'm just going to reach into my drawer. I've got a drawer over here in my studio that I call the nutbag drawer.
Where he keeps these nutbags. Because your nuts have to be kept in something.
They do. I have two lovely tracts that we picked up from, I believe, Theology on Tap.
Did you have to buy them?
No. I was given these as an act of love.
They're usually the worst ones are the ones they give away because they put so little effort into them.
They do cost money. Apparently, this one, Steps to Christ, is quite a famous one. I don't think I got this from Theology on Tap. I got this from somewhere else. Apparently, it was 49 cents. The other one doesn't have a price on it, which is kind of strange. But would we recommend this sort of thing to atheists as reading material?
It is useful to know what people have said.
It is. I mean, if you're going to debate with theists, then you really need to know what their arguments are. And there has been said that the Bible is the most effective tool at producing atheists ever produced. So, would you recommend reading a lot of religious tracts?
Well, it is interesting that you say in order to debate with them, you have to know what their arguments are. Theists don't stick to that requirement arguing with atheists.
And that's why we beat them so thoroughly.
Well, look, I think it's wrong to argue a straw man. You should try and understand what your opponent's position is if you want to have a serious debate with them. I think before I recommended atheists read the Bible, though, I'd recommend that Christians read the Bible. I think the option of debating and engaging with Christians is purely optional for atheists. I don't think atheists have to read the Bible. I think it's an interesting historical document, especially if you live in a Western culture that had a traditionally Christian population. It's interesting to learn about the Bible, and if you live in a country where people who take their faith seriously still want an unfair influence in politics, it's interesting to know where they're coming from. But I'm certainly not going to buy the Christian line that every child should be forced to read the Bible because it's the foundation of our civilization, because it's not. You know, it's any more than every child should be forced to read the Magna Carta, you know, from cover to cover, or whatever.
That's not just the Christian view. That's Tony Abbott, leader of the Australian opposition party, the Lib Nats. That's his stated view, is that every Australian child should be forced to read the Bible in school.
Well, he does happen to be isn't he Catholic? He's crazy Catholic.
Yes. He's a crazy Catholic, right. Yes.
The Mad Monk is one of his nicknames.
Mm. He's, in fact, the crazy Catholic who, the last time his government was in power, was the health minister who banned the abortion pill and was basically making Catholic decisions for the whole nation.
That's right, yes.
Forcing kids to read the Bible, I think, is an evil thing. Particularly in state schools, where there should be some sort of separation of church and state, because that's where you go when you're not wanting to send your kid to a Christian school. But when you're an adult, and if you do want to... Put this way, if you are going to have disagreements with Christians you meet for pleasure, then you should probably know some of what's in it, because they don't. And the fact that you know what's in it, you can... When they say... Well, someone the other day at a philosophy group I went to... They weren't arguing with me. It was one of those arguments that was not interesting enough to actually be part of, but I just heard bits. When he started pulling out, and Australia is a Christian country. I thought,
it's not
a Christian country.
Never been a Christian country.
Wasn't founded as a Christian country. It's not existing as a Christian country. And you can't tell people, you actually had one immigrant telling another immigrant, you can't come to this country as an atheist and tell me my religion is silly because this is a Christian country and you have to have respect.
I did exactly that.
But they were both immigrants.
Well, I can tie that back to the reading list, actually. The Australian Book of Atheism that came out not that long ago, edited by Warren Bonnet from Inbigan Books. Can't plug Inbigan Books enough, really. I can't just... Check them out online,
inbiganbooks.com.
They're a rationalist, kind of a free thought kind of a bookshop. Based in Queensland, currently in Noosaville, but they're moving to Brisbane, but with a good online presence, a good store. Warren just recently put this book out with a number of Australian authors contributing essays to it, and Chris Stevenson, our friend from the Sunshine Coast Atheists, actually contributed a piece on whether Australia is a Christian country or not, and has some lovely historical detail on some early facts of the founding of the colony, such as when the colony was first founded, the chaplain that came out with the first fleet was left under a tree and was very unhappy about it and wrote in his diary that he felt marginalised and left out.
Wasn't the first church built in Australia promptly burnt down straight away?
I believe it was, actually. Yes. there was a lot of anti-Christian feeling among the first immigrants, and there was a lot of sort of...
Actually, the first immigrants had never heard of Christianity.
Well, that's true. The first Western immigrants, shall we say.
The first British immigrants. Let us say, because the Dutch got here.
Some of whom weren't British. You know, the first fleet was a bit of a mixed bag. It was mostly British, but there was, I think there were a few Germans in there and a few other people that had happened to be jailed in London. But yeah, over the years of the founding of the colony, the main feeling seemed to be, you know, anti-clerical and anti-Christian. So I'm quite happy to say Australia never was a Christian country.
And it's an important theme, because that comes into the whole thing about the fact that we've got entrenched in most states, and certainly in New South Wales, the teaching of compulsory scripture classes in state schools, government-funded schools, and that this is seen as normal and acceptable because it's always been that way for the last 100-odd years, which is not that long a period of time, but seems that long a period of time in Australia. And it's really because it used to be the churches that ran the schools.
That's it. It was basically part of the deal, wasn't it, for the state to take over the schools from the churches, that the churches then insisted, okay, if you're going to take our schools off us, let us at least, you know, come in and do scripture classes.
But it was worded very carefully. I believe it was worded in such a way to say, not let us come in and do scripture classes, but allow those students who wish to study scripture some time to do so. So it wasn't supposed to be compulsory, as it is now. The current form it's got is not the way it was originally agreed between the church and the state.
And the current form it's got isn't even the current form it had at a couple of years ago, because we haven't done a podcast since the ethics trial got approved, have we?
We have not.
But it's going ahead.
Yeah.
So everybody else has done podcasts about it. So
of course. But,
just listen to everybody else.
Well, the latest thing...
They've done it ridiculously well, so... Yeah.
There's been some concern about it in New South Wales because an election's coming up.
Yeah.
And the crazy liberals, who are extremely fundamentalist Christian in New South Wales, there's a worry that they might sort of undo the ethics classes because they've always been against them. And they're in the pockets of the churches, but apparently the state government has just passed some legislation to make that difficult to do.
Yeah. Well, let them be the ones who, once the legislation has passed, go in and then deliberately try and pass legislation saying we're not going to teach children ethics in schools. That's going to be even harder than arguing against us, is going to be trying to then make the positive case that they should revoke this legislation, which I think is going to be an even bigger battle for them to fight. Just on the subject of Chris Stevenson and her essay about the history of this non-Christian nation, I believe Chris is also writing a book on that theme as
I
well.
I have heard that mentioned. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it too, so I hope I'm not, you know...
You've just let some secrets
letting
out.
Some secrets out or anything like that. No, I think it's fairly common knowledge that Chris is working on this book, and I'm very, very excited to read it, so...
So the topic is...
About the history of this idea of Australia being a Christian nation.
Awesome.
And so the history of Australia and religion and irreligion and that sort of thing.
Right.
So I think that is a book that I'd be very interested in reading.
Oh, yeah.
And it's got nothing to do with the fact that I think Chris is awesome. But she is.
But you do.
Yeah, she's lovely.
Awesome. So so what about the argument that to understand a lot of Western literature, you need a biblical... knowledge. For instance, I mean, you know, we don't really read this for casual reading anymore, but things like Paradise Lost by Milton and things like that have a strong biblical foundation, that you need some sort of knowledge of what's going on in the stories to understand
Matrix.
This great literature. Well, you know, there is an argument to be made that The Matrix is a Messiah story.
You don't need to read the Bible to read most of Western literature, and you don't need it to understand Western culture, TV, radio, music, or politics, because democracies aren't in the Bible, modern music's not in the Bible, nothing, none
ethics
of this is.
Ethics isn't in the Bible.
Ethics isn't the Bible.
Reason isn't in the Bible.
There's nothing there.
Look, if you want to understand a lot of things, you need to know the broad strokes of how Christianity arose.
Sheep guide.
Yeah, and that Christianity came from Judaism, as does Islam. And you can know the broad strokes of what's in the Bible without, you know, having to actually sit down and read the Bible. You can know the story of Eden and Noah's Ark and Moses and his Exodus and Jesus in its broad strokes without any suggestion that you have to read the entire Bible as a piece of literature any more than you have to read, you know, the Iliad.
or but then it's which version of the Bible
or whatever, you know. It's just an old book that you may choose to read if you want to. I don't think you should be in trouble for reading the Bible,
but well, it's interesting that this kind of saying the people
don't read it on the train, though. You look a twat if you do it on the train.
they seem to be saying that if you weren't raised a Christian, then you can't understand contemporary Western culture. So if you're Jewish or you're Muslim or atheist, if you weren't raised to read the New Testament, and I know an awful lot of people weren't, then you can't possibly understand modern music or art or culture or literature. Now, I know some atheist parents who are getting their kids to a religious school and are happy for them to do scripture classes because they believe that line about Christianity being part of our culture and you can't understand it without. But I think it's rubbish.
Well, I think there's undeniably an influence from Christianity on the culture.
But you can, it doesn't mean that you've got to be one to understand it. I don't need to bang my head against the wall to know that that's going to hurt me.
I can understand Christmas, and I have to tell you, I can understand Christmas without having read the Bible. I can understand Easter without having read the Bible. I can eat Easter bunnies and Easter eggs without...
Easter bilbies, surely.
Easter bilbies without having read the New Testament. I can argue with a creationist without having read the New Testament, without having read the King James Bible, because it's not the only Bible, by the way. There's more than one, but you don't need it. It's all Old Testament stuff anyway.
And, well, I mean, the Easter bunny is not Old Testament stuff, and nor is the Christmas tree. Or
any
or
of those
Santa
things.
Claus, or
Rudolph.
The eggs, the Easter eggs, or the Yule log, or the lights, you know. It's so much of this Christmas and Easter stuff. Easter is from Easter, you know. It's not even a Christian name,
and it's not actually an anniversary of anything either. It's a celestially calculated
astronomical event.
Furthermore, I would say to them that if they haven't had sex outside marriage, then they don't understand very much about modern society. Well, I fluffed that one up, didn't I?
You did,
you know.
But you know, we'll keep it in.
A book I'm reading at the moment that I highly recommend is called The High Price of Heaven by David Marr. And
is this David Marr the commentator from ABC?
He's the
Media
Sydney,
Watch he
yes,
was on for a while.
He's a Sydney journalist.
Isn't he Fairfax? Could he write for the Herald?
He's written all over the place. He's a writer. So he's written for lots of different venues. So he wrote this in 2000 during the Howard years about the influence of the right-wing religious movement on Australian politics and why it was so powerful. Oh. And as I'm reading it, everything he says is still applicable today. And why it is that Australian politics no longer goes for the democracy of what the majority want. Like censorship. They've done surveys, and now over 70% of Australians in 2000 didn't want internet censorship when Howard introduced it then. He's talking about internet censorship in 2000, and it all still applies. The reason it goes through is because they're all playing to the 30% minority, which they picked up from the religious right. And it's the 30% that are the swinging voters that don't care about party politics, that don't care about any of that stuff, so you can appeal to their baser instincts and basically just go for the religious crap. They won't care what you do with taxes. They won't care how you govern the country, as long as you pander to their religious interests.
But is it even 30%? I mean,
In 2000, it was.
That would be lower now?
10 years later, it probably would be.
Recent statistics that said, what was it, 7% of Australians are regular churchgoers?
But of the 30% swingers...
Would have thought there'd be an intersection there.
I think of the 30%... His argument was of the 30% swingers, the religious right are the ones that you can swing.
30% of Australia are swingers?
Swinging voters.
There's a lot of car keys in the bowl at the weekends in suburban Sydney.
That's a big bowl.
So they're going for the minority because the minority will vote for them. Whereas if you are a Liberal voter, you'll always vote Liberal. It doesn't matter what they'll do. If you're a Labor voter, you'll always vote Labor. It doesn't matter what they'll do. So why even bother caring what you think as the majority of Australians who vote Liberal or Labor, so they don't have to go for populist stuff anymore, or even democratic stuff? They can go for these weird minorities who can just tip the balance one way or the other.
Now, I would have thought the recent election, where Julie Gillard got eventually returned on a very tenuous margin, actually kind of might have given them a bit of a wake-up call on that. You know, Labour voters aren't always Labour voters. A lot of previously Labour seats turned Green.
Well, that's
a lot of previously Liberal seats turned Labour, and there was a lot of shake-up in the most recent election.
The Greens were not 10 years ago when this was written. The Greens were not the main third party. The alternative party at the time were the Democrats before they self-destructed. And so it wasn't even thought. The Greens were such a minority, nobody ever thought that they'd take the Democrats' place. So the Democrats were the ones at the time you would vote for, and they were never going to be significant. I agree with you. I think what's happened is that the majority of people have become so put off this strategy of both sides pandering to the religious right and the swinging voters instead of the majority, that they've said, well, stuff you, we will vote for someone else. And so the Greens have got a tiny bit extra and got into partial coalition with the Labour government as a result. It just remains for them to have an influence for it to matter.
I mean, from my personal point of view, and you know, this isn't a Sydney Atheist official position or anything, but I'd hope that the Greens would pick up even more seats next time around to give that bit of diversity to opinion and stop this whole pandering to a minority that goes on or has gone on in establishment politics so far.
I agree. I don't agree with the Greens on everything they say.
But you're a vegetarian. Shouldn't you be all over it?
Sure, I'm a vegetarian. I don't know. They seem to be a little bit...
crazy?
Yeah, a little bit ideological in their opposition to nuclear power.
They are. This is why in the past I wouldn't vote for the Greens when the Democrats were around as an alternative, or anybody was around as an alternative, because the Greens, they didn't do it this last election, so I'm hoping that they're a bit cleaner now. But they used to lie about nuclear technology, like lie outright.
They were a lot more pragmatic this time around, I think. Mm. I think they saw that they had a chance to get in and had to get away from some of the more ideologically held positions that they have.
But there's some weird stuff, like they've got Marrickville Council in Sydney, which is a Greens council for local government, which is under state government, which is under federal government, if you're not familiar with the Australian system. As a council, they shouldn't be making international decisions because it's not their jurisdiction. But they have. Marrickville Council Greens have decided to get involved in the Middle East conflict, which many of the asylum seekers living there tried to escape from, and decide that they're going to boycott anything to do with Israel.
Now, this is
because they've taken a side in what should be something that neither side is right.
This is very interesting because we're actually sitting in Marrickville Council right now. We're in that constituency as we're recording. And I'd almost forgotten about that. Thanks, Ian.
It's crazy.
They've been a long time anti-nuclear council. You'll see signs around the place saying that, you know, Marrickville is a nuclear-free zone. And this
and how do they enforce
which
that?
Which is just kind of nonsensical, really. But it just means that when they pass their preferences around, as happens in politics, that means they'll go for anti-nuclear.
But they lie about what anti-nuclear means is the problem. They're anti-nuclear medicine, which is where I take issue with them, because nuclear medicine helps a lot of people. And Australia is one of the few places in the world that still makes nuclear medicine. We have a medical reactor at ANSTO, at the Australian Nuclear Science Technology Organisation, in...
Lucas Heights.
And they want to shut it down. And we supply, well, we can't import nuclear medicine from the other side of the world because its half-life is such that it won't last very long by the time it gets here.
But books for atheists.
Books for atheists. Read The High Price of Heaven by David Marr. I recommend it. It's a little bit out of date, but it's
straight
pretty
good. Back to a script. It's fantastic.
If only I had one. Other books.
Should we mention the intersection between skepticism and atheism, perhaps, and recommend some of the books from the skeptical authors like James Randi and Michael Shermer?
Demon Haunted World.
Demon Haunted World should be on atheist and skeptic reading lists. It should be on everyone's reading list.
Should read it.
It's an astounding.
Every child book. Should be compelled to read it in school.
I think you'll fail on that argument.
Sod the Bible.
I thought we were anti-compelled reading.
should be compelled to learn something while they're at school.
They shouldn't be compelled, they should be strongly encouraged.
Strongly encouraged, that's right.
The Blind Watchmaker by Dawkins, I thought that was rather a beautiful way of putting evolution very plainly on the page. It's old.
It is very nice, it is old, but I'd recommend the Greatest Show on Earth over The Blind Watchmaker now.
Yet.
You can borrow it, it's up there on the shelf.
Ooh.
It's a far more, I think it's a more wide-ranging and less technical explanation of evolution, and it's more easy to grasp if you're not already got an in-depth view.
What about Climbing Mount Improbable?
Climbing Mount Improbable? I don't think I ever finished that, you know. I say guiltily. It's over there somewhere.
It, then.
But I have finished Why We Believe, or is it How We Believe, by Michael Shermer, which takes a lot of sort of neuropsychological information about religion and pseudoscientific beliefs.
He did Why People Believe Weird Things.
Why People Believe Weird Things is on the same bit of the shelf. That is classic. I've read that so much it's falling apart now.
I'm just having a look here, and I hadn't read this, but I didn't know it. Neil Gaiman apparently has, you know, written a book on atheism called Everything You Know About God Is Wrong, The Disinformation Guide to Religion.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you think he ever had any nicknames at school?
I think he had one or two.
Apparently
he's done all right for himself, though.
Yeah.
He turns a biblical atrocity story into a comic that almost sent a publisher to prison.
Neil Gaiman also collaborated with Terry Pratchett on Good Omens, which is a sort of a riff that's on the eschatological kind of nonsense kind of Revelation. I loved it. I loved that to bits.
I've got it in French, so I'm reading it very slowly.
You've got it in French?
Yeah.
It's hardly Descartes, is it?
No, it's not. But he wrote in Latin, lazy bugger.
Another one that came up here that I haven't read, I just did a quick search. Jesus Potter, Harry Christ, published by Holy Blasphemy, where they're arguing not that Harry Potter is a Christ-like character, but that Christ is a Harry Potter-like character. And they're both fictional figures. Sort of redemptive mythological heroes.
Kind of interesting.
Mm.
And there's a lot of that.
Interesting.
A lot of heroic fiction does do that sort of coming back from the dead or near dead kind of stuff. You know, it's the big drop in expectation before the final triumphant finish.
Yeah, and everything going to shit, and the one guy who can come along and fix it. And like we mentioned the Matrix earlier, but a lot of superheroes.
Did they ever make any sequels to The Matrix?
No, they never made any sequels to The Matrix. I wonder why they never made any sequels to The Matrix. I'm surprised after it did so well that they didn't consider it. You know, normally they'd just sell out and make some. Yeah. But I'm just surprised that they never ever made any sequels to The Matrix at all. You see the same in a lot of superhero stuff, like Batman and Superman. I think is very messianic in a way. Like the one guy who can come along and I don't. Maybe not so much Batman.
Batman's more of a tragic kind of a.
But I mean, Superman definitely got a lot of Jesus stuff with the idea of like Kal-El sending his only, or Jor-El sending his only son.
Get it right,
Kal-El.
Get those Hebrew names right.
Sorry, Jor-El sending his only son Kal-El to Earth, who is then a superhuman guy who can.
Okay, so we're not necessarily recommending Superman for atheists, but perhaps Batman.
No, watch Superman as well. He was always my favourite as a kid. Although I understand that that Batman is better. Superman. It's partly because of my vintage, because the really good Superman films came out like 1979, 1983. And the really good Batman film didn't come out until, 1989? When I was already...
But there was the Batman TV series.
Oh, come on.
Batman the Super Detective and Rationalist.
That was just brilliant. Brilliant stuff.
Yeah. Although there's a little bit of kind of woo-woo, isn't there?
There's usually a little bit up on a
mountain.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's the whole DC comic world. Unfortunately, most of the superhero comic books have magic in them somewhere.
Yeah.
Let's face it.
Jesus.
Superheroes are a little bit pseudoscientific.
Well,
even if you do have one of those Science of Superman books on your shelf, which I don't. I have the Science of Jurassic Park, which is rather
good. That was the cool thing. The other thing that people might want to read, kind of, I don't know if you want to count it as atheist or not, you've got The Watchmen.
Watchmen is
a superhero comic book where there's only one superpowered hero. All the rest of them are masked vigilantes who are really good, but they don't have any secret powers. They just have their minds and their bodies, except for Dr. Manhattan, who through a nuclear accident has an actual... But he's basically a god. He's a god with... He's transcended his humanity and he's a god, and that becomes a problem in the story because it's rather unbalanced when one country really does have a god on their side.
Yes, that would be a bit of a problem.
That's in the movie and in the comic book, and I recommend that one.
I notice also on your shelf you've got Chocolat by Joanne Harris.
I do.
Which is another.
No idea how I acquired that.
It's another rather splendidly blasphemous book, I thought.
Ah, lovely. I've got the Satanic Verses somewhere too, but that was a bit of a trudge, so I might not recommend that as a
Joanne Harris was. I've got a name drop again here.
Joanne Harris taught me French for 5 years at school. And she actually taught me all the way up to the lower sixth, didn't teach me in the upper sixth because she just sold the film rights to Chocolat, which then came out around about the time I left school.
You've just lost anyone who hasn't gone to a British school. Upper sixth? What?
Upper sixth is the final year of school before university.
As opposed to the lower sixth.
The lower sixth is the one before that. I don't know why they didn't just go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Tertiary.
But it doesn't. It goes first, second, third, fourth, fifth.
And
then if lower sixth,
school,
upper
if
sixth.
Your school has sixth form, you do upper and lower sixth. If you don't have a sixth form in your school, as I did, you end up going to a sort of a college, a community college type thing.
But they've now they've since rearranged it and they've made it much more like the Australian thing. So it goes up to, I don't know, year 11, 12 and 13, something like that. But anyway, Joanne Harris was also clearly not a religious lady. I think she was bound by the terms of her employment not to be too anti-religious, but it was evident. And when you read Chocolat, it's a wonderful book, the conceit of which is a single mum and her little girl come and they open up a chocolate shop in a small French village at the start of Lent. And it's a small village where everything's run by the local church. And the village administration and the church are so intertwined by history, and it's so small there's no point having two hierarchies. That basically the local priest runs the village, and of course it's deeply blasphemous to open up a chocolate shop during Lent when nobody's allowed to eat chocolate. And then there's the tension as the villagers are, she's a fantastic chocolatier, and the villagers aren't allowed to eat chocolate. And the church is trying to shut her down. She would be perfectly happy if the church shut down. So it's well worth reading.
I think I'll have to pick that up.
Yeah, Chocolat.
I think I'll have to pick that up finally off my shelf. And
the film's also worth watching as well. I'd recommend reading the book as well, of course, as always. But the film with Johnny Depp and Alfred Molinar and Judi Dench and Juliette Binoche playing the basically autobiographical character of Mrs. Harris. And I've got to say, she didn't look anything like Juliette Binoche. But reading the book, I think there's something very autobiographical about the character of Vianne, the main character. And also, I did recognise at least one other fellow teacher at our school embedded as a character in her book, which was charming.
That's quite excellent. Yeah. I'm quite impressed. As one of my final suggestions, because we've gone up to about 40 minutes so far.
Of course, for our 10 minutes.
I would like to recommend the Science of Discworld series.
Oh.
While it is not specifically an atheist thing, it does a hell of a lot of very good, clear scientific exposition. And it does it intertwined with the Discworld story, which is always entertaining. And moving on from that, you could also go and read the wider Discworld series, especially Small Gods, which is... in some ways quite a stinging indictment on some sort of fundamentalist religions, specifically the sort of monastic religions. So I would absolutely recommend the three Science of Discworld books. There might be four by now, I haven't been keeping up.
I think we should have a separate, another list.
We probably should.
For just for fiction, because I think there's so many works of fiction that we could recommend.
Oh, certainly.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Absolutely.
Yes, Black Easter by James Blish.
I love the Robert Rankin books because some of them are beautifully blasphemous. Others are a little bit sort of weirdly pseudo-supernatural odd, but they're great. But yeah, I do absolutely recommend the Science of Discworld books.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Jason and Ian, for your wonderful suggestions. Thank you very much for listening. You can find out more about Sydney Atheist Podcast by going to sydneyatheist.org/podcast. There's some other stuff on sydneyatheist.org as well. Check that out. There's meetups and stuff. You can email us.
You can.
sydneyatheistpodcast@gmail.com. Somebody's still checking that? Good.
Please do email us. We're very lonely. It's been a while.
Yes. And send us your suggestions for your own films. And books. Books.
Yes. Anything you'd like us to talk about.
Yes. Or read.
Awesome. Thanks, everyone.
Yeah. Goodbye. I'm Dave the Happy Singer from DaveTheHappySinger.com.
And I'm Ian Wolfe from IanWolfe.com.
And I'm Jason Brown from MyColleaguesAreIdiots.com.
That could have just been a put down.
So much for heaven, so much for paradise.
If you think I'm spending eternity with you, then you better think twice. So much for the angels, so much for glory. If the prophets had seen you coming, they'd have written a different story. So if you're sticking here till the end of time, I'm sorry mate, I think I'll be off. There's a bloke in purgatory who's advertised the spare room in his lot. So much for the blessing, so much for the afterlife, a never-ending stretch of tedium and strife. And the tales of Nirvana are simply not true. So much for heaven, and so much for you.